So we are here at Penlee Park with the lovely Terry Allen, and he's going to tell you some stories. So go for it.
Yes, as I was saying, you know, Mara's Island used to have 33 or 35 businesses. I forget exactly how many it was, but we started off up at the top of Mara's Island, and we had Shrapnel's Garage. He was Shrapnel was the name of the garage owner, and he was German, and during the war they used to keep an eye on him because they thought he may be a spy, because his family Shrapnel, they was the inventors of Shrapnel that got put in the bombs and made Shrapnel. You hear people say that they you know, we got shot, you know, hit by shrapnel. Well, that was the lead and bolts or anything they put in the bomb, and that's where they got the name from, shrapnel. But he had the garage. It was a National Benzol garage. It was two brothers. They were, and they kept this, and they used to charge up accumulators and things for wirelesses in those days, because there was no electric then. It was accumulator and a battery. For your radios or wireless, as we call them, and I think he used to charge about threepence for accumulator to be charged up, and but that was them, and they had the garage, and then the opposite side of the road where the Dolan is to now in Mara's Island there, that used to be known as the Dolan was, and they had a Mr. I'm going off with names, you know. And he, I'll come back to that in a minute, they made it a little gift shop there. That's how that was built. It was a little small shop. They made a little, like a little garden shed, really. That's all it was. And they used to sell in those days, into the 40s, like putting on a seagull standing on a limpet's rock or a bit of stone or something, and people used to buy them in those days, take home as presents. And I'm still trying to think of his name at the moment, but it'll come to me. He was a great man on that sort of thing, and he, the first mechano set Mara's Island School had. Mr. Bamberg, he was called Bamberg Studio. Mr. Bamberg, he presented Mara's Island School with this very large mechano set. And the man that was put, or the person that was put in charge of that mechano set, was Gerald Ivy, the blacksmith. He lived in Mara's Island then, and was right up until he died, as you might say. He was always the blacksmith. He started his trade off with Willie Travascus. William Travascus in Sharp Hill. But Gerald was put in charge of this mechano set. It was a beautiful thing in those days, very big, you do all sorts, you could make all sorts with it. But that was that. And then you came down then, you had Mrs. Miner's, Willie Miner's shop, General Grocer, on that, Mrs. Miner's. And well, she was a, Mrs. Miner's was a Sampson, Tom Sampson's. That would be an entity to Tom Sampson, and Major Sampson had a farm down Plain and Quarry in those days. And then across the road you had the Fire Engine Pub, where I said you, Tom Mitchell was there in those days. And going up Sharp Hill you had, Mr. Ivy, Gerald Ivy, the blacksmith, which was William Travascus in those days. The Travascus family had another blacksmith shop up in Golsithney with old Mr. Travascus and his other son, Sam Travascus. But that was those. And then next door to the blacksmith shop up Sharp Hill was a wheelwright shop, and Johnny Jewell, he was called Johnny Jewell. He used to make the wheels for the wagons, or shafts, you know, new shafts for the wagon, or make wagon altogether if needs be. And then across the road from that, in Sharp Hill, there used to be an old square buildings. Never ever had a roof on it. Never had a roof, but it had great big thick walls and a great door. And that was known as the Pound. A Pound. And I said that the reason it's got the name as a pound is because if you had cattle or anything and it got out by night and somebody rounded them up, they would put them in the pound, and you had to pay the town council then a pound to get them out. That was your penalty. You had to pay a pound in those days to get for them to release your cattle, because they was out straying at night, you see. And that, and then if you come down School Lane, you had Mrs. Bennett's, Jack Bennett's he was called, her husband. He had a little small hold in there, had a few cows, and that, and used to milk them by hand in those days, and drive them up the road in the mornings to the fields, and bring them back in the evenings down School Lane. And then he used to go around with a little pony and trap, and selling the milk in the mornings. After milking, he would go round door to door then, up round the estate and down Mara's Iron and all. And the women would, if they was out, they would leave a little note there, or 2 pints today, Jack, please, or wouldn't 2 pints then have a quart? A quart is 2 pints, as you know. Probably, or may not, but that's what it is. Or they might say pint and a half, Jack. And they said they would just leave a basin there or a jug there that would hold a pint and a half or two jugs, whatever, small ones. And he would take the dipper, take the jugs out to the pony and trap, dip out with a dipper, a pint and a half, bring them in, put them on the table or wherever, and write that in his book, and on again. He go to the next place and so on, and an old pony would know where he was going to stop. He would walk on until he come to that door and stop on his own without being told. And Jack would go in, and one day we boys was going to school, and we walk coming down School Lane from up the top part there, up top Shop Hill, walking down towards Jack's little farm there, little small old inn, and outside Jack's pony was, and he just brought the pony out in the trap with the two churns of milk in the back. And I tell you now, he went back to shut the gate. Of course, something startled the old pony, and he walked forward. And as he walked forward, he went forward with a bit of lurch, and the bitty churns dropped out the back. Of course, off come the top, milk all going down the road. Well, Jack, you never heard nothing like it in all your life. He could stand there 10 minutes swearing and wouldn't say the same word twice, you know. We boys had the fault for said we frightened the pony, but we didn't frighten the pony. And one of the boys said, I think it was Harry Allen, I believe it was, said, "Shall we call the cats?" "I'll give you bloody cats," he said, "you buggers, if you aren't going to school, I'll kick the ass of all of you, buggers, you know, get to school." So we just took off and went to school and kept out the way. But that was Jack. And down where I'm to, used to be oats there then, and milk cows in there. And he used to milk cows much the same as Jack, and sell the milk. And he used to tie up 6 cows in there and a couple of heifers. And he had a mill in there which rolled the corn down for feed the cows with and all that. And then when the cows was gone field of an evening, he used to cut men's hair in there. And my father said he had his hair cut in there, what they call basin cut. And he said, all straight back and sides, like all around the sides, like, you know. I said, you know, these little boys you see are out abroad there, when they got just like a top of their head is all with a bit of hair on, all the sides of them is all shaved up. He used to do that with the horse clippers. One would have to turn the handle. I got one home in the shed now, made by Lister, they was. Used to use them for clipping horses and clipping cows or anything like that. And as one of them in the shed now, and turn the handle, and he would cut their hair for them and charge them a penny. And if he was a young kid, he would only charge them an 8p. But that was old man Oates. And Mara's Iron Band used to also practice in there. Oh, never know. they was called One for All and All for One, I think it was called. They was called Band of Hope, they used to call them. And they used to be in there, and I remember almost a caddy, Arthur Caddy, he used to be the drummer. And he had the drum was nearly as big as he was. You couldn't see him behind the great drum, bang, bang. When it was carnival or anything, they would come up through, well, God knows what the tune was supposed to be, but they was all blowing what they thought was right. And Arthur would be coming on in between them, bang, bang, on this bloody drum. Oh, everybody, hi, hi, missus, hi, hi, and go on. And that would be the carnival. And we used to have that, it was in the summer, and Marazion Michaelmas Fair. And the fair, Marazion Michaelmas Fair, was the 29th of September. Always the 29th of September. And that was held up on the green, on Marazion Green, up top of Sharp Hill. There was a green there, they call there, Long Barn is the thing. Harry Clark used to keep a few horse implements and stuff up on that, because he had the Trevenor Farm in those days. And he had a little few horses, a few roundabouts there and things like that. And then they used to have the gypsies and things like that used to come around selling horses and ponies and donkeys, anything. And that, and they used to run them down down Gwallon Lane, and run them back up again, and that, so you could see the horse or pony or whatever moving, make sure he was sound and all. But these jippos, we used to call them, they used to run to be there, and then they would be down the pub, and come back up from down Tom Mitchell's and add a few pints aboard and fall out and fight. And my father used to say, "Now look, come on, it's time we was going home. We're going to be held to pay here in a minute. I can see this coming." Poor old mother and father and that used to pick up traps, and we would go home. And my auntie lived down the bottom of School Hill, Mrs. Caddy, and she was a sister to my brother. She was Alan. She married Bertie Caddy in Marazion, and she had a son and a daughter. Ursula was the daughter, and Kingsley Caddy was the son. Ursula's no longer with us, poor old soul. She died about 18 months or so ago. But Kingsley's still alive. He was a mechanic for T.F. Hoskins in the days. But that was a story up there. And going down Marazion then used to be just down from where I used to live, just down there. Used to be a baker's there. What do you call baker? I can't think of his name now. I got photographs of him home outside the house with the pony in the trap and the baker's van, pulling the baker's van. Truscott, that's what it was called. Truscott's Bakery. And he used to go around selling bread and cake and things like that down there. And then you went down a bit further, and what we call Stopgate Hill, the bottom of School Hill, the granite post is still in that today. It's still there today with a great hanging on it. That was always that hill coming up to that, down the bottom as I'm coming up. That was always known as Stopgate Hill, because that used to be a toll gate there in the days. That was a toll gate there, Stopgate Hill, that was always called. Then you went down a bit further, and on the left-hand side, you had a shoemaker's shop. And he was called Ernie Simons. I said, he was called Ernie Simons, and he had three daughters. And Rosemary was the eldest. And I think she's the only one that's alive. No. And I know Elizabeth, the middle one, has died. She was found dead down by Red River a few years ago now. And then the youngest one was Norma, which was my age. We was in school together, Norma Simons. She lives down at Hale, I believe now. I think it's Hale. Anyway, Norma do. Then you went down a bit further, and you had the old schoolhouse, the old school, where my father used to go. That's no longer school now. It's in private residence now. But he went to school there. The boys was down in that school. And the Marazion School is now, that was built for girls and infants, which is over the gate. That was built in 1905, is over the gate now, 1905 that was built. And girls and boys used to go up there, and the boys, girls and the children used to go up there, and boys used to be down in Mara Zion in their days. And but when I went, so I was going to school, there was boys that was closed, the bottom one, and they all went up Mara Zion. You went up there until you was 15. My brother left at 14. But unless you passed for the county school, then you went to county school. But I was never brainy enough to go to county school. I never had enough about me for that, because as I say, I didn't go to school till I was 7 and a half, and I went 3 weeks, then 9 till 12. I was home another 11 months because I had TB very bad in those days, and wouldn't allow to go mixed with other children like that very much, and at all actually, and wouldn't allow to go to the picture houses or on a bus and things. I had to be out just in the fields going around and that to get over it. Dr. Penny treated me, the old Dr. Penny, and then that's the old man, the old father one, and then his son took on Comet Penny, which is the father to the boy Pennies that's in Mara Zion now. And he, when he went away into the army during the war, before he came home again, he went away as a doctor. His father treated me, the old Dr. Penny. But that was those days. And then once you left that old school, you went down a bit further. On the left-hand side again is now a house that's got a garage, but that was known as, that's Willie Leighty. Willie Leighty's shop. That was another, just a general store, sold everything. Butter, eggs, you name it, they sold it. It was just a little general grocery store. And then you went down a bit further again, and you had another one called then, a general store again, Reggie King. He was called Mr. and Mrs. King, Reggie King, in their days. And then opposite side the road, where is now a dwelling, used to be a carpenter shop going up there, and that what do you call, used to have a carpenter shop up there. They used to Perry, White and Perry, White and Perry, they was called carpenter shop, and they made all sorts and did lots of odd jobs around, putting in windows, and used to paint the school, I suppose, all done under contract. I don't know how it worked in the days then, but, and then you come down from there, and you had Freddie Reynolds' butcher shop, boy Freddie Reynolds, and that, and Sidney Orr's was across the road from that. He was a cobbler as well. Ernie Simon was a cobbler up there, and Sidney Orr's was a cobbler. He used to mend your boots and shoes, and now they don't, hardly anything mended now, they all throw it in the bin. They all these throwaway days now, and compared to what it used to be, men used to have hobnailed boots. I remember hobnailed boots were a name myself, damn me. And that, and Ernie would put new tacks in and re-hob them and all, and cues and heel plates and all on. Men wore hobnailed boots and that. But anyway, Freddie Reynolds' butcher shop, as I say, was the other side of the road. And up behind, he would buy a bullock or a cow or whatever, or a couple of them. And on Mondays in Helston, and then they used to have drovers then, no lorries then, well, the lorries were just coming in, and they would drive them then from Helston down after the market, down through Mara Zion, and rest them in the Folly car park overnight, rest them in there. And they would cut out Freddie Reynolds' butcher shop stuff, and he would turn they up around the back, and he would slaughter they around the back. I suppose there was no gun in their day, hitting head with armour, poor buggers, you know. That's all it was, tied fast and bang, and that was the end of that. But anyway, that's how it was done. And then you went down a bit further from there, and then you had the fish and chip shop in there, which was right where the Chapel car park is to now. Dick Thomas had that in their days, and he did lovely fish and chips, beautiful stuff, and people would be queuing for it. A little short chap walked with a limp, he did, and his wife was a little short lady, Mrs. Thomas, and the aprons would be like driven snow, all shining, they'd be, you know, really, really white. And he would do fish and chips and that. And then you went down the next one just past the chapel, next joining the chapel actually, there was Mrs. Thornton. She, they had a little sweet shop and sold sweets and tobacco and things like that, a little confectionery type thing, I suppose you would say. And she used to be a music teacher, and she, I see her now, Mrs. Thornton, a little short, sluggy lady, and she used to, her hair was done in what we call like buns, earphones around your ears, always done up, like round, her hair was done around, it was like earphones up to her ears, they was, in hair, and she used to teach music. Then across the road, you had T.F. Hoskins, and they had down in the thing, they had a workshop down there for tractors and all was coming in then, into farming more then. But they also sold farm implements, horse ones and the tractor ones in their days, which was just coming in. And then they had a mill up overhead, right up top. They used to roll the corn and make corn for the bullocks, like, in, or chicken corn or anything like that. They had all that sort of thing down it. That was all done down there. And in the same lane, opposite side of the road, Johnny Rodder. He was a monumental mason, and he used to have a little make gravestones. You know what a monumental mason is, I suppose. Do the gravestones, and he was a little short chap, and he had this little Ford car. I remember now, and he wasn't high enough to, when he sat in the bloody car, he wasn't high enough to look over the wheel. He used to look through the wheel, the spokes of the wheel, and driving. You could just see his head poking through the wheel. And it'll, as I say, little short chap, and then he would put a bit of stuff, few some stone, whatever stones he wanted, the gravestones, in the back of the trailer, in the hill, this was, down, were you same hill as you go down into Oskin's yard. And we was there, we thought we'd have a bit of fun with him one day, and because old car wasn't very heavy, it was only a little old small thing, so we youngsters now seen him there. So what we done was we got tied him and we lifted him up and put the booger up underneath the chassis on two stones, so that the wheels would go round, but she wouldn't go, because the wheels would go round, but they wouldn't touch on the ground to drive them forward. Anyway, we went back down in T.F. Hoskins' yard, and poor old Bill Sewell was there then. He was the foreman over the mechanics, like Bobby Leahy and all. They was there, and as I say, I can't think of his name now. Anyway, Barry White. He was there, and Diggy Blackburn and all. And we went there. And of course, we was laughing. Billy said, "What you boys been up to? What you been up to, you boy?" "Oh, he said, "Be bloody ructions here in a minute." Anyway, after a bit of a while, Johnny come back out now, got in this little old car now, started up now, putting in gear, and tried to go on, seeing, let the clutch out, wouldn't go. He revving them up. I couldn't understand it, because it was only like an inch clearance on the from the road to the tyre, because we were only lifting up a little bit of that. Anyway, we come in. "What's the matter, mister?" "Oh, I don't know what's wrong with this." Where's Bill? He said, "I can see him now." He went, "Do you want Mr. Sewell?" "Yes, yeah." "Bill, come up and have a look at my car." He said, "The bugger won't go." He said, I started him up. He revving him up, and the wheels was going round because he wasn't touching the floor. See, well, Bill said, "Well, he said, I tell you what," he said, "how would it be?" He said, "If you put the wheels on..." "What do you mean, Bill? On the bloody ground is on the ground now, isn't it?" He said, "No, they're not quite on the ground. You must have drove in on a stone." "Well, how the hell is that?" He said, "I don't know who that is." Anyway, they lifted him up again. A couple of the chaps there come there and lifted him up and dropped him down, and off he went now, up the road now, and swearing at the same time. Well, that was him. And then across the road, you had Willie Praed. He used to sell tobacco and stuff, and cigarettes, and He used to sell oilers and leggings and shoes and boots and all for men. You know, welly boots was coming in then more, and hobnail boots as well. He sold that sort of thing, and oiler skins and leggings and all, as I say. And he had a woman who worked in there. She was called Joan. And Joan, I'm just trying to think if she was called Joan. Well, she was Joan Travascus in the end. She married Peter Travascus. But Joan used to work in there, a big, ginger hair. And she used to be the assistant in the shop in those days. Anyway, Willie prayed, he had a limp and that, and he was known as a runner. And you don't know what a runner is. He used to go around to people who liked to make bets and things like that, or take bets, he would. And he'd come to you, and if you wanted, you'd say, come to me tomorrow, Willie, I'll do something in the 3:30 or the 1:30 or something. And he would take the bet off you, whatever he was going to put down, shilling each way or half crown, whatever it was. And then he would take that home back to his shop, and he would ring it through to the betting shop in Penzance. I don't know which betting shop it was. He would ring it through and make that bet for you. And I said, then he would go down in different ones. He would go there, and I said, I remember just down the road from him then, again on the same side, used to be Mr. Yallop. Yeah, old man Yallop, he was, and ironmonger as well. Used to sell batteries, Vider batteries was the thing. They were blue and yellow coats on the around the sides of them. Vider they was called, and he used to sell torches and anything like that, you know, but batteries and all. And if you went down and had a battery and say, yeah, that battery we had off you, Mr. Yallop, isn't very good. You didn't lighten the light. What do you mean, son? And he used to wear dark glasses, and he used to take these dark glasses now, and he'd rub them with his finger and his thumb. And he'd look at, well, he said, he's lighting it. Yeah, well, he didn't want a little spot there. Well, you must have been using it quite a lot, have you? You must have been using it. No, not that much, Mr. Yallop. Oh, well, I'll give you another one, but I'm not giving you another one after this, mine. So he would swap them over. We then, this battery, like, you know, and that was him. He wore dark glasses, Alec. And just down from him again is a little hot way that go up, and you go over the stairs. And Mr. Nichols used to be up there. He was another boot and shoe man, you know, cobbler. He was a nice chap, he was, an oldish man. He'd come in Penzance, he used to catch the bus out every day. And we boys, he used to sell studs, you know, for your football boots. And Mr. Nichols, he used to charge us 8p, Ernie Simons up there, the first one coming down the hill, Ernie used to charge us 8p each for our studs, you see. And if we went down to Sydney Oars, he was down opposite the butcher shop, as I said to you earlier on, Ernie would charge a penny each for these studs. Well, you used to have like a six studs in the and two in the eel, and he would charge a penny each. Well, we used to go down to Mr. Nichols, because Mr. Nichols would leave us have three for a penny down there, so that was a better deal. You had three down there for a penny, and he was charging a penny each, and Ernie was charging 8p, so you only had two up there for a penny, and one down for a penny down there. But down Mr. Nichols, he would leave us out. We had three for a penny, so we used to go there. And then opposite, just across the road, was Thadderwaite, Mr. Thadderwaite. You get George Thadderwaite, and Maggie, his missus was called Maggie. She's a little skinny lady, but she reminded me, and George was a great tall chap. He had a voice, used to have, hello boy, how are you doing? And, oh, he would be there, and Maggie Thadderwaite would be there, and he used to have these biscuits in a tin in his window, and the tins of biscuits in their days was as they used to come down from in the big tinfuls of biscuits, and the front you could have like the demonstration, or you had a glass top to them, and you would put there, and you could see from outside what the biscuits was, looking in his window, and you'd say, I'll have half a pound a day or a pound a day, whatever. And George, when they would be in there, he wore a great brown dust coat, I can see it now. And Maggie used to give him hell. When it was his dinner time, she said, George, oh, dinner's on the table down there. See? I'm coming now. And she would come in the shop, and of course, he would see somebody, he'd be chatting. I've told you, your dinner's on the table. All right, Maggie, all right, I'm going down now. Cheerio to whoever you're talking to, and go down and have his dinner, poor old bugger. And but then back up from that, again, opposite, like I said to you, used to be Barber Hawking. He was a hairdresser, he was Barber Hawking. He used to cut men's hairs or whatever, and women used to have them cut as well in those days with him. We have our hair cut when we was boys with Barber Hawking. And he used to put a little in the man's, with the men sitting, he used to put a stool in if we wasn't old high enough, lift you up on the stool and cut your hair that way. And woe betide if you was in there having your hair cut and Willie Praed come in, because Barber Hawking, he was a bugger for betting. Oh, and Willie would come in and say, never said Barber, always called him Hawking. Well, Hawking, are you going to do anything today? Oh, I don't know, Willie. I don't know. I haven't had time to look yet. I meant to have a look in the paper. I haven't had quite time to look. Then that was fatal then, because he would now pick up the bloody paper now, and you'll be there now 20 minutes or so. I'll do that one, I think, in the 1:30, or oh, and I'll do that one in the 3:00 at so-and-so. Oh, yeah, and that one in so-and-so, to Willie. Oh, righto, okay. Well, look, here's the money. Anyway, he would take the money out the till and give them to Willie Praed. And Willie would then, he was known as a runner. He would go back and run, ring they through to the betting shop. And that's how it was with those. And then you went down a little bit further on the opposite side to you had I can't think of his name now, it's gone from me. He was another ironmonger, and he used to sell oil. I can't think of his blooming name now. Oil and paraffin and oil and things like that, and nails and any darn thing. That's what he sold there. I can't think of his name at the moment, it's gone from me now. Come back in a minute, perhaps. And then next door down to that was Miss Curtis. Little is now made into a house now. Mrs. Curtis, she used to sell materials that women could make curtains, some curtain material or whatever you wanted, and that sort of thing. Haberdashery, I suppose you call it in today, but that's what she was. She used to have all these great big rolls of curtain material and or make dresses or whatever you wanted, and wool for women knitting and cotton and all that sort of thing, knitting needles and all. Oh, remember as a child going into her mother, and then you had that was her, and then you went down a bit further, you had the war memorial, and then you went down a bit further again, you had the that used to be a butcher's shop, then it was put into a bank. I believe it was Barclays Bank, that one was. If I remember right, I think it was Barclays Bank. It's now an antique shop now. But opposite side the road to that, then, there was another Praed. That was the boy Praed that had that. Victor, he was called, Willie's son. He was like a newsagent. He did all the papers and books and magazines and all that thing, Victor did. And alongside of that, top side of that, between that and the police station, there was a big double doors there that used to go in. Reynolds's, that Trelawney people, which that was car repairs. That was a car. They used to do repairs to cars, or old cars in the days. Old cars and their vans, because they had some vans and all on the road. Trelawney did, and their own vehicles, cars and things. Oates? He was the main man. Tony Oates. He was the main mechanic. And then it was, damn it all, what was he called? He lived up Kozisny. I can't think of his name neither now, but that was there between the police house, and the policeman then was PC Allen in those days, no relation to me, but PC Allen, and he was a tall chap, and he came home once years ago. We was up the other house living, and he seen Feather. And he said to Feather, oh, he said, Charlie, he said, I was going through, he said, I noticed you haven't got no license for the dog. You had to pay, there was, I think it was 7 and 6 a year then it was, or 5 bob or 7 and 6, I can't remember exactly, a year for a dog license. And you had to have a dog license. If you didn't, you'd be summons. So, anyway, Feather said, oh, damn, I never thought about that. Hell, I'll get down and get in there. I had to get down the, went down to the post office then. So Feather then went down post office and got this dog license. Anyway, come back, that was all right. Next thing was, one day now, come out looking for Feather now in some state. What's gone wrong now? Where's your feather? Oh, he's up so-and-so field. Oh, anyway, go up and tell him come in. It's urgent. Get and tell him come in. Anyway, going up there now, tell Feather to come in. What the hell's gone wrong now? I said, I don't know. Better come in. She's in some state home. Anyway, went home now. Mother said, what's the meaning of this? This year. Anyway, everybody, Alan, the thing, he reported it as Feather never had a dog license, and Feather had to go court, cost Feather 10 bob. He paid out with Alan when he caught up with him. He said, well, I didn't mean to go. He said, well, it cost me, I had to go court. He said, it cost me 10 bloody shilling in a court fee, so summons. So poor mother, she was in some state over that. But I still can't think of that chap. Anyway, I'm going down a bit further now. And then used to be on the corner, what we call Warden's Corner there, very sharp corner. And they used to have cottages around there, and all, a row of them, all gone. They've all been knocked down. They was knocked down about 1960. They were 59, 60. Should never have been allowed to. And they used to, as I say, have these drovers that would bring cattle down from Helston now to if they were going to Penzance way, into slaughterhouses in Penzance or maybe St. Just or wherever, and they'd rest them up in the folly field down the bottom end. I was the last one keep bullocks down there myself. But anyway, they was coming down one day now, these drovers, and they used to come up, two or three of them would come on ahead, and somebody else would be driving them on, and he would knock people's doors if their door would open and say, shut your door, Mrs. There's cattle are coming, shut the door. Anyway, he went down now on it. They went on ahead now, and they got down to these doors down there just on Warden's Corner, shouted to them, shut your door, Mrs., shut your door, there's bullocks coming, cattle coming. And they knew that was Monday, see. Of course, they shut the top doors, because the doors, they cottages, they was what we called Hep's doors. You see, Hep's door is a stable door, you call them now, but the correct name for them is a Hep's door. The bottom half closed, but the top half stay open. Of course, they come down there, and one of the buggers went in, one pushed the other one, scat the door open, and in they went now, in this woman's kitchen now, Mrs. Maddern, she was called, went in there, oh, he stamped the bloody place to pieces in there, you know. Was ructions about it. Oh, they really messed it up, you know. What they are, what come out the bag in, the shit has come out the bag in. He was lagged everywhere. That was ructions. And anyway, they eventually got them out and took them on down to Folly Field and rested them overnight. But then that was them. And then across the road, from where just down from the bank on the corner, used to be Dolly Warden. She was another ironmonger. She was, the Dolly Warden, she was called, old lady used to keep it, never married or nothing. They used to say in those days, there's only two virgins in Marazion. That's Virgin Ill going up the back of Marazion and Dolly Warden. They're the only two virgins in Marazion. That was commonly known as that then. And she used to sell all sorts of oil lamps and batteries and oil for your lamps and paraffin and all that business. And then next door down used to be another little shop then called Miss Paul, lovely little lady she was. I still got a book home that my father bought for me down there when I was a little kid. I don't know, I think it was about 6 months in they days. Miss Paul, she was called, and I wouldn't part for that little old book for the world. And she used to, a bit like Victor Praed, other side of the road. She didn't sell daily papers, but she sold books and writing paper and all that sort of thing, books and pencils and pens and things in there. And then you add down a fraction further, just as you get to the town clock there, there used to be another shop, Reverend Trevorrow, he was called. He was a draper's shop. He used to sell men's clothes, like trousers and things and all that, and waistcoats and coats. Well, you know what a draper's shop is. He sold all that, shirts and pullovers and all that. Then it was when he finished, Eileen Ivy had it then. Mrs. Mundy, she was, when she got married, she was called Mundy, Jean Mundy's wife. And she had it as a fruit and veg shop. I used to deliver lettuce and stuff to her, cucumbers and tomatoes and all in the days. And then across the road was two little ladies. They used to sell, one was a tall lady, another one was a little short lady, Miss Thomas's. Always went as Miss Thomas's. I never knew why, whether they were sisters or what, I don't know. But they used to sell cake and buns and all that sort of thing, bread, cake, buns and all that and things. And then next door down to them again was Miss Clark. She used to sell butter and eggs and milk and things like that. See, that was her thing, Miss Clark. She was a sister to Mrs. Bennett's that had them. Her husband had the up in Trevenor Lane there, in School Lane rather. She was a sister to Mrs. Bennett's. Mabel, she was called, Mrs. Bennett's up there, and the other one was Miss Clark down in the little shop that sold the butter and eggs and cream and all that sort of thing. And then you had Reynolds's, Freddie Reynolds's, the butcher shop there. I got photographs of them home. They used to, everything that they, you know, butchers and that, general butchers. Because then up where the bank, Lloyd's Bank, Barclays Bank was to, up there, in behind, that when I said to you earlier on, that used to be a butcher shop. They used to kill the stuff in behind the shop in their days. We drove in a little gateway there, and they would be killed in behind. And the chaps, one was a younger chap, and the other one was a bit older. The antique shop, they backed for the other side. They were like a couple of queers, if you like, you know what I mean. I don't know what the proper bloody day's name of it is for them today, but whatever they was, they lived in there, and they couldn't tell how they come across these stone troughs and gullies dips in the thing outside in granite stone. And one day I was talking to them, I said, well, where are they to? I went in there and had a look. I didn't know, I thought I better, I don't like for any bugger to see me going in there. They'll think, what's he up to going in there with they? Anyway, I went in there and had a look. I said, well, this used to be this. Oh, that's why the hooks are in the beams. I said, that's why the hooks are in the beams, yeah. And they had the hooks in the beams still up there, up over where they used to hang the meat and stuff up to, like in their days. And they were gutted or whatever, or cutting up, I don't know, or whatever they had to do. But that solved the problem for them. They it was the slaughterhouse in the back. But anyway, Freddie Reynolds was down, that was the other Freddie Reynolds then, that was the old man Freddie Reynolds that had the shop down there next door to Miss Clark. And then next door then, on the corner then, that was was a proper house then. It's now a shop now as well. Then they made it a post office one time, but the post office is where Cobble Corner Shop used to be. There was no Cobble Corner Shop then as such. It was a post office, and they sold everything, like stamps, well, as a post office would sell, and writing books, writing pencils, and all this business. And then opposite side of the road again, then you had the chemist shop in their days, the chemist shop. And then underneath the town clock used to be a seed shop, and what was he called? Reggie Holmes, and Michael Holmes. Reggie Holmes always wore plus fours in their days, you know, trousers like the golfers used to wear. They pull the stockings up to their knees nearly, when they would call them plus fours, they used to call them. And he had a seed shop there. When I say seed, he used to do, you could have grass seed and you have whatever mixtures you want. And he had a proper mill in there and a mixer and all. He sold seed to farms and all, broccoli seed, cabbage seed, corn, you name it, and whatever mixtures you want, he could mix it for you. Reggie Holmes did. Nice chap. And that was them. And then down a little bit further, then just after you leave the chemist shop, on the left-hand side of the road, then you had the workmen's, the Code Institute there. That was the Code Institute. And men used to go in there, and they'd have the papers delivered in there. And if you didn't want to buy a paper every day or something like that yourself, they'd have certain papers put in there, and men used to go in and read the paper and then come out again after they finished reading them. But then there was a snooker room down there. They had three snooker rooms, one down in the bottom in what they call the cellar. When you started to play snooker when you was young and you started to play snooker, you was allowed to play snooker down there. And then when you got better and they realized that you were a bit better at it, you was allowed to go upstairs. Then you went upstairs into the top room, which looked out onto the square. And the middle room was for the older men. That's where they played all the matches to and all the things like that. They used to have, the old men used to play in there. You weren't allowed to play on that table. That was strictly for them. But you boys could go down, to start off with, down in the cellar, and then when you got better, you behaved yourself, you was allowed to go up in the top room. And that's how that carried on. But then next door today, it was a saddler shop. Latest Saddler was there in those days, Latest Saddler shop. And he did repair and harness, horse harness, and make saddles, or as Mr. Nichols did in Penzance. And Langston's up Causeway Head, they were also saddler shops. But Mara's Iron was like that. And then it was turned in, when he finished, Bernard Creewell took it on, and he made it into a vegetable, fruit and vegetable shop. And they used to sell fruit and vegetables. And they also sold ice cream, but it was lovely ice cream. Creewell's ice cream was good ice cream in their days. That was them. And then you had come across the road, then you had the Captain's Cabin pub, and then next door you had Marzone Hotel, and then next door to that you had Jerry Gelbert, Gelbert Stores, Jerry Gelbert, that's the son to George Gelbert. He would sell clothes in there as well. Like women's clothes, a lot of women's clothes and all. He used to sell dresses and coats and, well, you know, whatever. And then he also had a wholesalers, he was, and he used to sell tea towels and all that thing in there. But they had wholesale up Beacon Road there, and George was up there, and that was another wholesaler. He was a big wholesaler for going around to shops all over the county. Roger used to go out as an salesman for them, to take orders. And then they had people working in the wholesaler shop up there doing the orders up. and that, and then they would take them out in a van and deliver them to wherever. That was them. And then if you come down, then you come down the bottom, then you're down then to the Cadolphin Hotel. Cadolphin Hotel, and along the bottom side of that used to be a stables there where they used to keep the coachman horses, used to be kept in there, and Harry Gall was the last one to keep horses in there before it was all converted now into offices and park and all that sort of thing. And then going down towards the beach, down over the steps there, toward Otley Joe, down onto the beach, there used to be the stone shop, and they used to have stones and all, and make rings and jewellery out of stone. They used to call the stone shop. And then up the top, coming up onto the main road again, opposite side the road, there was another general store grocery shop, Matthews, Reenie Matthews, and that shop. In those days, she was like a general store, just sold and everything, like, you know, from bacon, cheese, and well, as a general grocer, like, you know. That's who was in there, Reenie Matthews. Then next one down was the Clipper Cafe. They was like a little cafe. What do you call, Mitchell used to have that. What's it called? I can't think, it was damn name now. Leonard Mitchell. And he had two sons, Brindley Mitchell, which was my age, went to school with me when I was there, and John Mitch, which is still in Marzion living. But Mr. Mitchell, he used to have like a little cafe there and have people in summertime, like people would come if they was visiting the Mount or holiday makers, would go in and sit down and have a cup of tea and a bun or a cake or something like that, you see. And that's what he done. And he used to do Sunday papers there as well. People for Sunday papers, he used to do the Sunday paper. He didn't do daily papers, he did Sunday papers. And then opposite side of the road where that little place is there now, that we used to call that the Giant's Nose there. That used to be Trelawney offices in there. Trelawney being Tom Reynolds's, that was their offices there then, in those days. And then you went down a bit further, and you had the other chapel, because there was two chapels. That's the Ebenezer Chapel, that was, and the one up in Marzion was the Methodist Chapel. That was a Methodist chapel. That was the Methodist one. And then you had the church hall in Marzion there, which is opposite the monument. We do the poppies. What do you call it again? In there, that was the church hall. And then you had the Wesleyan one. The other one was the chapel, Wesleyan Chapel. And that bottom one was the Ebenezer. And then you had the Tudor Cafe then. So that was a confectionery shop, like sold buns and cakes and splits and all sorts of things, bread and all fancy cakes and all that business. They sold that in there. And then opposite side of the road, you had the Edward Jago's Garage. That Jago. He used to have taxis, two Buick cars, old American Buick cars he was, and he had them as taxis, and he would do weddings or funerals and all that with them. And we boys, if we were going off on a Saturday to play football and that, we never had no cars then or nothing like that, we would say to Mr. Jago, we were going to play down Port Leven, we would say Saturday afternoon, "Mr. Jago, hello, what you buggers want now?" he'd say. "I wonder if you could do us a favour, Sardi." "Oh, what do you want? Where do you want to go?" He knew what was coming. "Well, we're going down Port Leven, play football. I wonder, would you run us down in your taxi, please?" "What time?" "Well, pick us up, say, 1:30, up the fire engine, up beside the fire engine pub, where the outside there, where Shrapnel's Garage used to be there. Outside there." "Well, that's going to cost you half a crown, you buggers. I'm not doing that," which in today's money is 12.5p. and we'd all put in like threepence each or something to pay for this taxi, and he would come up, pick us up, drive us down Port Lem and stay there, watch the match and bring us back. So when we got back Marazia now to where he was going to drop us off, where he picked us up from, we said, "Mr. Jago, well, I don't suppose you would do us another little favour. What do you want now?" "Well, he wouldn't drop us in Penzance Station. We won't go pictures night. Would he drop him? We've missed the bus now. Would he drop us in Penzance Station?" "Well, all right, I'll drop you in there, but that's another tanner." So he would charge tanner, which is 2.5p in today's money, and he would drive us in Penzance Station. Then we get a few chips in our hand and go pictures in the evening. And that was how it was. And then if you have chips, then if it was summertime, we'd walk home then, walk home across the beach or along the road back Marazia. Or if it was rain, well, we'd have to jump on the bus. But if it was fine evening, when we came out from pictures again, we'd have another 3 pennies or 6 pennies of chips, whatever we had left, and walk home then, because we spent our bus fare. So that buggered that up. We ended up walking. But yeah, and if we got on the bus, and it was fourpence, and you had twopence, and Henry Williams was on the bus then. Henry Williams, he lived up Marazia, and he was a conductor for Western National. He'd say, "We say, good, right, that's fourpence. We only got twopence, Mister. Only got twopence, Mister William. Right, you buggers. You only got twopence, you spent your money on chips or something, you get off." He'd make us get off down Philiskirk then and walk home the rest of the way. He wouldn't leave us ride up. He'd make us get off down Philiskirk. And we had walk home in the days. Yeah. Oh, it was hard. They talk about hard times today. We used to have some fun here. Yeah. Get in Marazia Main Street. And in winter time especially, see Mr. Yallop down there and have a penneth of carbine. And used to have carbine lamps on push bikes and things then. And some of the motorbikes had carbine lamps. Bit of carbine. And what they do is they'd put that carbine in a little thing underneath in the lamp. And they'd have another little thing, and the water. And that would drip down on the carbine. And that would, as he was all dripping down, that would throw out the light for your light. It was only a glimmer. That's all it was. It wouldn't give no light as such, just a glimmer. Anyway, we boys used to say, "Can we have a pen of the carbine, Yallop, please?" And he say, "All right, boys, what do you want? Oh, well, for the light on the all right. Oh, here we are." And he would cut off the big rocks like them. He'd cut off a pen of there, and we take that out now. And when it come evening time now, we would break up in bit smaller pieces. and then have an old cocoa tin or a treacle tin and put a bit in that tin and that, and then spit on them and then squash the lid down and drop them in the road, in against the gutter, like, you know, of the road, and then run off up the road. And when that built up enough gas in there, he would go off like a shotgun, bang, and the tin would go one way and the lid would go the other way. Then the doors would open up. The people would be out. "Hey, bloody boys, you white cats, hey? Yeah, I know you are, you buggers." They'd be hollering and shouting and that. We would be up the top now, out the way now, laughing. And sometimes we'd be coming home like that, and we'd get two doors closed together and have a bit of string now and tie the both doors together and knock both doors and then run off up the road. And of course, both of them would come to the door at the same time, more or less, and they'd be trying to open the door, and each one would be pulling, and they couldn't open the door because we tied the buggers on the outside, didn't we? There'd be ructions over that then, in their days. But hellish a pot we used to be, you know? Hey, oh yeah. Well, we've had some fun in our time, like, you know. And there was, BB down there. I know we was pulling seaweed off the beach one day, and I was only young, working, just started work, as you might say, and I was put down there now to to build the loads on the seaweed. They was loading them with eels in their days, forks you call them, we call them eels. And build the loads on them. And I built this load up, and this old lady up the top of opposite Edward Jago's garage, when you come up off the beach, she was called Ermatrude Harris. Nice enough person, really. But she used to be there sitting down now, and she'd always have her skirt pulled right up on top of her legs, nearly, sitting down there advertising. And she used to entertain the men that came when they were scrapping the wash pipe, like, you know. And a few of them would come up and go in and see Ermini if they wanted to. Anyway, John Thomas was driving the tractor. Leonard Soudan was a brother-in-law to Leonard, or to John. He was loading the trailer with me on, and John would be throwing up his one side, and Leonard would be the other side loading them up, and I'd be up there building them away and stacking them away. Anyway, as I say, that was Leonard Soudan, nice old chap. His boy used to live up called Zithney, and his daughter lived down Marazion. What's it called? I can't think now. What's it called? I can't think what they're called now. They're blown. And anyway, we was loaded up now and come up off the beach now. And as I say, John was driving, John Thomas, and somebody come up. Leonard was just going to turn down the road with a load of seaweed. Leonard said to John, "Hang on a minute, Thomas, hang on. What do you want?" He said, "Hang on, stop, whoa. So Ermie would sit on their window ledge, and she was always waving to me. Hello, my lovers, she used to say. How we doing? Everybody was her lover. Hello, my lover. Leonard said to Ermie, he said, "Well, what's trade like, Ermie?" "Oh, very quiet, boy. Isn't much doing, my lover," she say. "Isn't much doing. Well, if you haven't got much doing, is that quiet, Ermie, would he take that boy in there and show him what it's all about?" "I drive on, Thomas. Drive on, John Thomas." I said, "You silly bugger." My face was like a beetroot. "Yeah, live here." He said, "We'll pick him up on the way back, Ermie." I said, "Drive on, John Thomas. Drive on, you silly bugger. Where are you going to leave me? I'm next load, Ermie." I said, "You silly buggers, I ain't going down with you no bloody more. You buggers are like that." She, poor Ermie, she waving and shouting, leave me here with me. And I said, "You go to hell, John Thomas. Drive on. We've had some bloody laughs.
Can you tell us the story about the beer and the horse coming back over the causeway?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I say, grandfather, he was a trocher. The trocher in their days, you see, went around to shops. He had a bit of land and all, and he grew vegetables and all, and had a cow or two and a pig or two. Anyway, he would go around now selling to shops. And one of the places he used to go was over St. Michael's Mount. Because St. Michael's Mount was quite a little community over there then. They had, your boatmen and your harbour master and postmaster and all. They was all employed by the estate over there, and they had a shop over there and a pub over there. And father said, his father used to go over there now with horse and wagon with carrots and parsnips and all vegetables and stuff and that, and turnips and that. And then he said to sell over there, and women would come out and buy off him sometimes as well. Anyway, he said one day they was over there like that, and he said father would stay there until it was too late nearly to make our way back. The tide was closed well over the causeway. If he thought he's going to sell another turnip and make another penny, he would stay there. And he said, I said, come on. He had up Mrs. So-and-so wanted another turnip. Anyway, eventually she came out now, and he'd give her this turnip, and she'd give him a penny, I suppose. Well, with time we come back across the causeway now, the bloody water was up, lifting the wagon off the ground, and it was right up to the horse's belly. And I was only a boy sitting on the wagon, afraid my soul. He said that I was going to get washed off, he said, because I couldn't swim. And he said that it would, as the waves came in, he would lift the wagon up and just drop them down again. And the horse was walking, trying to paddle through it. And he said, eventually we got over to dry land and come up beside Frankie Thomas's car park. And then he turned the horse up the road, and we get up then to the Godolphin pub, and he throw the reins over to my father, and he say, "Here, take that home." He said, "On it, take that home, put the wagon in the house, on it, and give the horse a cord." Anyway, father would have to take the horse home then, and put him in this cart house, on it, and take the horse in and give him his corn. And grandfather would leave the wagon, leave father with the wagon to bring home, as I say, and he would go in Godolphin now on the beer. And I suppose he bugger spent nearly all he had earned that day, nearly on beer. Anyway, come on rolling now. And mother, he'd be singing, he said, and his mother, that's my granny would say, "Art, you're an old man, he's coming, he'll be in here in a minute now. He's full of beer here." And anyway, he would go in now, what they call tend up horse now, last thing, make sure he had a drink, put a bit more hay in front of him, and a bit more corn if he thought he ought to have a bit more, and bedding down for the night. And next thing was, he'd sit in the straw there side of him and drop off sleep with the bloody horse. He'd sleep there all night. If he came in the morning, granny said, father said, he would come in the morning, 7 o'clock time, as though nothing had happened. And he'd been paralytic that night and with beer. But he said he'd be up and on again next morning, no problem, have his breakfast and on again. But that was what it was like then. And granny used to say, Art, he's coming. he'll probably stay out there all night now. And he'd be dropped down in the straw, I suppose, pickled. And that was the end of it till morning. So that was what it was like in their days, you know. That's different life altogether than today. You know, today's life is, everything is all got to be exact, but it was not like that in those days. It's like I say, down then in the morning, when the cattle was in the folly field overnight, then the drovers would come there in the morning and then drive them on then to Penzance. And then they would cut out, which had to go to Watt Slaughterhouse, and this one had to go to somewhere else, and they would send them down. Some had to go on to St. Just, even. They'd walk them out to St. Just and keep going, you know. And that's how they was. And they were known as drovers, and that, you know. And like I say, and when for water, we had water, electric put in 1947. I remember that coming in and being able to put a switch down and the light come on. Oh my God, yeah, couldn't believe it. And that, and I remember my eldest sister bought a lampshade for the bedroom, and I can see it now. It was like a creamy color, and he had blue ducks on it all around, like a duck and a little flock of ducks coming on behind her, right around the outside of it. I can see it now, in their days. And water was, we carried water from the pump indoors, that was for drinking. That was, but the water for mother for washing clothes and all was caught off the roof from the launders, and that, you know, the launders and your downpipe and all would run down into the gutter, and they call it there. You call them launders, and run in these great big tanks, and that would fill up for mother for washing clothes, and then she would draw it off in the pail and taking in them at a boiler then and boiling up. But before we had electric, she had a fire underneath, and it was like the fire underneath in the thing, and to boil the water up, and then she would take that in then and wash the clothes with them. that was called Caudlin water, known as Caudlin water. You wouldn't drink that water because they'd say, don't drink that water, that's Caudlin water. That's what came off the roof. We didn't know what was in that so much. But the other one was coming from the pump, you know, way down. And they had a windmill there. When we was in the other cottage, we had a windmill, and that would fill the tanks as well for water. But that was good drinking water. That was, but that was all, you know. But you if you never had much wind for a long time, your tank would run dry, and then you had to pump them out then with a thing. But then they had an engine put on them in the end, a little motor. And you start the motor up and that would pump them up. And when the windmill wouldn't work and you could pump them up with the engine. Later on, in the days. But like I say, there used to be 33 or 35 businesses all going down from Marazion. And in the Marazion area, from Golzithney, if you like, down to Red River here in Marazion, and going back then to Jim Pierce and Tregarthian Farm, and Reggie Oates down Gwallan. Don't go the other side of the river because that's in Ludrum Parish. This was in Marazion Parish. Used to be 23 farms in that area, 23 farms, and between 80 and 90 full-time workmen on those farms, between 80 and 90 full-time workmen. And then you had 23 farms, so that gave all farms, you know, a lot of the workmen was married with families and all that business. They all had families to keep, it was to be 24 farm, 23 farms and 24 bosses, because Oliver's down there, they were two brothers and they were both bosses, so you had two bosses on one farm. I know, I was a boy and I went down pick up taters for them. I had a job with them picking up taters and all, and been there all day picking up from 8 o'clock in the morning in Jake Field, picking them off the ground in their days. Hard going, and then you had your crib sort of thing there about half past nine, and then 10 minutes, quarter hour crib. Then you went on again till dinner time. You had an hour for your dinner, and you started again, and then you went on again then till 5 o'clock. And then you stopped for your tea. You had tea, and you started again then 6 o'clock, and you went on till 8 o'clock. Picking spuds off the ground, all day like that, up and down, they used to have a lot of people in. You had your own staff during the day, and then two Land Rovers in those days. That's about 1960 now, 59. Bit before that, 59. They would send two Land Rovers down to Porthleven to pick up a load of women to come up. Come up and pick up potatoes, and they would stay there until 3 o'clock. Stand there at 3 o'clock. Then the Land Rovers would take them back to down to Porthleven again. Then, for when the children come out of school, and we'd be still carrying on picking up potatoes. And then in the evening, 6 o'clock time, a lot of people would come on in the evenings. Then shop workers and all. Picking up potatoes, looking for a job in the evening for Money Go Corpus Christi Fair and that sort of thing. A gang, what they call another gang, will come on in the evening then till 8 o'clock. And I was down there one day like that, in the coach field it was, just going in Green Lane. I was picking up potatoes this evening, and Kenny Oliver, he was called, he was a bugger, he was. I would walk on sticks, he had hip trouble. I was there picking up taties. I never heard them coming. And I, like you said, you know, you were there picking up, working all the way on. And my back was killing me now. I was picking up one hand, like, then I'd give that side the rest, pick up with the other hand, holding on to the basket at the same time, and filling them. And all of a sudden, he whacked me across the ass with the stick. Whoa, walking stick. I flyed her. What do you think you're doing, old boss? He said, I tell you what. I said, what's that? He said, I pay you for two bloody hands, not one. They use the buggers. And I grabbed the sticks out of his hand. Hey, they go, you let me down. I said, I don't care if your head go in the bloody earth. I said, you aren't wagging me with no stick. I said, I tell you, I'll see your mother and father for you. Don't see my mother and father. I'm the one here working, not them. I said, so he left go of the sticks and I slung them out across the titties. You can bloody get the eight because I can't move, he said. I said, if you want them, your sticks, you fetch the buggers. I'm off. And I left him with his titties. Never, that was the end of that. Never had no more without Kenny Oliver and his bloody titties and his sticks. But, oh, they were hard days in they days. You had to work, and if you didn't work, you was up the road, pal, and yeah, they watched everything. Yeah, hard times, and then they think they're hard done by today. No way are they hard done by today. We'd be out pitching bales, even the bales, that, when I say pitching, I mean a pike. You have a pike and I have a pike, and one each side of the bale, and upward and building them away. Then you had to go off then, take them in, offload them in the barn, pitch them off again, and the same with corn, pitching sheaves of corn, and shocking corn when after the binder cutting them. I got binders on now in the house. Shock and cut the corn with a binder, and then shock them up, then if it was a bit catchy time, you'd mow them up, put them in mows like. Used to be 7 sheaves to a shock in a mow, in a shock, and then in the mows you'd have 3-4 shocks to a mow, and then make them bigger, and so they dry out more. That was all hard work in those days, all hand tools and done. But yeah,
can your final story be the one with the beer? When you had to go and get it from Mrs. Francis.
Oh, yeah. Miss Francis. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Poor old. Yeah, like I say, down in School Lane, used to be a lady, little old lady down there, called Daddy Francis. We used to call her Daddy Francis because she had a bit of moustache, and we all said she was like a bit like a man, but she wouldn't, you know. She was dressed as a woman and that, and they used to wear long clothes in the days, and her pinnies was like the driven snow white. But anyway, she lived in a house called the Tree Pences, and we would be up on the green, up the top Shop Hill, playing there, we boys and that. And next thing was, Miss Frances would come out and she would look up the thing, and if she caught you looking down, she'd wave to you, oh, come here, my sonny, come here, sonny, she used to say. Yes, all right, Miss Frances, what do you want, Miss Frances? Well, perhaps a couple or three of us would go down. What do you want, Miss Frances? Would you do me a little kindness? Well, yes, Miss Francis, what do you want? If we can, yeah. Well, look, take this jug and go over to Tom, that's Tom Mitchell, over the fire engine pub, and get me a jug of ale. Oh, all right, Miss Francis. And she, here's the money. She give us fourpence. And I remember having my hand and a jug go across, and you weren't allowed in the pub, you was allowed inside the door, just inside the door, but not in the bar or anything. Knock on the reception hatch, and he'd slide that hatch back. Hello, boys. Hello. All right, Mr. Mitchell. Yes. What can I do for you, boys? Can we have a jug of ale for Miss Frances? Do you want a jug of ale, please? Oh, good. Yep, here we are. Let's pass the jug in. Pass the jug in to her. And he's asked fourpence. There we are. We give him fourpence. And he'd drop it in. I can see it now. He used to pull an old wood till there was. And he'd go, bing, when he opened them up. And he'd put the fourpence in, and then shutting up again, he'd go click, and he would draw off the jug of ale, and he would be all frothy on top. Now look, here we are, boys. You take that straight up to Mrs. Francis, mine. Okay, yeah, all right, Mr. Mitchell, yeah. You go straight up with it, mine. Okay, so we just go down the road just a few yards, and then you went up a little hot way. It took you a little narrow path going up between the houses. It took you up to School Lane, you see. And we've got to get up in the hot way now, and say, here, you tried beer. No, I never tried beer. You have a sip. No, 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 she'll know. She went, no. Have a sip, have a sip. No, no, no. Go on. Anyway, I said, this one would have a sip, another one would have a sip, and then you had to wipe your lips, because she said, she would take the jugger from me when you got up. And thank you, my boy. Thank you, very kind of you. Before you go, just a minute, I got something for you. And then she would go in then and come back out, and she would have a little what we call a poke of chips, like a little cornet made up it was, with a few chips in them, just on a newspaper, no, probably just newspaper, and she would put like half a dozen taters or so, chips or so in that for you to share between yourselves, for going for her. And because she used to sell a few chips out the back door of her house to make a few shilling, I suppose, for herself in they days. I don't remember selling fish, I always remember selling chips. And a dear old soul she was. But she would do that. I tell you another one. And down, I used to go to play my friend, he was called Lewis Buttons. Do you remember Lewis Buttons, do you? No, no, he lived down playing in Quarry. And Miss Allen, she lived there, Miss Allen. She was called Allen. I'm wondering whether your family was a part of them or not. It could have been from down there. And we used to be down with Lewis playing. He used to live up with Lewis. Go up and play with Lewis. And the poor old boy's dead now. And Lewis and me were down there, and three or four others down there playing. And I know one day we had hoops. And Mr. made hoops, and the blacksmiths would make a hoop for you out of a piece of metal, big hoop like that, and join them together. And then we'd have a drill, a stick that guide it, and then run with it like that, see, drill, and then you could steer it, sort of thing like that, and then run along a road. See who had the best, who could go the fastest, who had the best hoop. And we'd be going along, you know. And anyway, come now, dinner, we run in, see, and Lewis wasn't the fastest runner, he went, poor boy, he was good as gold. He and me have had some fun. And I'm going to beat you buggers this afternoon. He said, I beat you buggers this afternoon. I'm going to have someone a bit better than you. I'll beat you. Oh, you can't run like that, Button. You can't run so fast as we, Button. You wait and see. Anyway, we went home dinner and come back after dinner now. And when we got back after dinner, waiting, couldn't wait now to see what sort of hoop Button had. Right? Yeah. He had a tire, a big lorry tire. Christ, you can never hold that one. This is going down Rilubbus Hill. Right. You know going down Rilubbus Hill? Do. Going down like that. And then you turn at the bottom and you go like that. Going down that hill. We used to run down there with hoops. You know that house is looking up the hill. And he's got a garden gate there, looking up the hill. And we were running there with this, running with the, he'd get away from you. He went, get away. You watch. I beat you, burgers, you know. Off we go now. Down the hill there, running, four or five of us now. And the old hoops jumped. Of course, Lewis is now, got away from him. That time. And you'd think, as true as I'm here, you'd think somebody was in that, steering that, that tire. He went straight through that gateway and smashed right into that door, looking, I just think of it every time I pass nearly, smashed right into the door. Oh, smashed into the door, yo. Smashed the bloody door. Oh, it was hell. Because we said, what are you doing, Buttons? What do you, we know what he's going to do. And of course, out they come now after we took off now, and we were scooting up the hill. It was gone. He went home, because he lived down the bottom there. Anyway, they was held up about that. We had, I think it was something like 2 bob or half a crown each. We had paid towards this door now. A lot of money then. You know, I mean, I'm talking about it's like 12 and a half p in the day, but not now, we know. But it was held up about it. Anyway. But then another time we was down there like that. We was down there playing. And who should be down there now? Miss Allen come out from down. She lived down there. Michael Allen's mother. And she, hello boys, hello Miss Allen, all right, yeah. I wonder if you boys would do me a favour. Well, yes, Miss Allen, what do you want, my love? Well, I don't suppose you'd go up Oskins, she said, Oskins shop now, up Golsithney, yeah, and get me some currants, you see? She said, I want a bag of currants. I'll do some baking, she said. I run out of currants. I wonder if you would be kind enough to go up and get these bag of currants. Yeah, all right. So, yeah, I know. She gave us, what it was, 6 pence or something, whatever it was. Anyway, Off we go, went up now and got these currants from Miss Allen. Coming back long now. Now, poor old Lewis, he loved currants. He said, here, give us that bag, because they used to weigh currants out the big, they used to have a big thing, a tub of them, and they weigh them out, and they put them in like a blue bag or a brown bag, and then run the top, fold the tops over, see? When they weighed them out. So he said, give it, no, she'll know, your big currants will be gone. He went, no, she went, no, I sort that out. Anyway, oh, you are. So he'd have a handful out of them, seeing, going, oh, I need, well, handsome, he didn't love currants. One bit for, I've got a few more, No, you can't. You won't have nothing left. We'll fix that up, we say. We'll fix that up. So, anyway, by the time we got down with Dammy, we never had more than about half a packet what we should have. Oh, hell's going to be ruckus now. hang on, he said. You know, I'll fix this. He said, I'll fix that up. How you going? Can't fix that? You can't make them look no more. You wait, he said, you wait. So he went in on the burrow. And he picked up rabbit dung. He brought a handful of rabbit turds and brought, mix them, wouldn't you? Mix them up. There we are. That's brought the bugger up level, am I? You give them to her. And he, that's true. If he was here, he would tell you now, poor, give Miss Allen this, these currants with this rabbit dung in them. It was hell. We give it to Lewis. He's the one that took them to her. You are, Miss Allen. Took it and scooted. He did. He was gone. Yeah, boy, we've had some fun in our time, you know. All Ireland was fun, really, you know, in the days. And we used to go out, him and I, we used to earn a shilling or two in the like winter time with something on. We'd go out frogging. And you know what frogging is? No, you don't know what frogging is. No, it's not that bad. So we went, he said, Go frogging, I am. Go ready. I said, yeah, what are you going on? Yeah. Got torch, ready. Yeah, got torch. Right, will we go frogging? What time? I said, oh, no, what time? How about 6, 7 o'clock? Yeah, okay, dark, see. And we'll get in down the old bottoms, like down there, down Lubbock there, like. And used to catch frogs and put them in a bucket, you know, and that. And then we used to sell it, I think, we said, fourpence each or something like that for a frog. And they used to send them, take them off up to the laboratories. This chap used to come and pick them up from Lewis's place. He used to pick them up from his place, because I wouldn't there go, really. My mother didn't know what I used to do. I gone down with Lewis, and we went frogging. And then we catch, he said, look at that, I got these buggers. Look at that, Alan, there's two for the price of one here. Look, there was mating, like, you know, grab a tool, hit them in the bucket. Yeah, this man would come for them and pay, and then he'd share the money out between us. I think it was fourpence each or somebody we used to have for them. Or something like that. Yeah, in the days, you know. In a bucket, and then we had to put a lid on them, you see, otherwise they'd dump out again, gone. Yeah. And you see two there together, and he'd grab them. Oh, look at that, he said, two for the price of one. I'm doing well.
Well, thank you so much, Terry. Yeah. I can't thank you enough for such tale telling. Absolutely brilliant. Normally I don't sign off. Hang on, Terry's remembered something else. Go for it.
Me and my friend, we used to go around farming. He lived down Plain and Gwarry. Terry Richards, he's called. And he was. We used to go in Major Sampson's, which was a farm opposite side of the road, Major Sampson. And Tom Sampson, his son was called Tom, and he had a daughter called Betty. And Roger Pierce, his father, had a farm for a bit further up. And we used to all go down and play together, see, dinner playing. And this particular day now, Major was carrying corn and that, and he had an old international tractor. And well, loaded the thing up. So on the way back out now, got coming out the gate, coming down towards the gate. Like, we had to ride up beside Major on the tractor, Major Sampson, and he was driving them. And we were kids though, was all in around Major, and I can see it now. We was Tom was there, Priscilla was there, right side of him. I was there, Roger Pearson, Terry was there. We was all crowded around him. Poor little bugger, he never had hardly moved. And we was going through, got down, nearly down to the gate now, And Major tried to put his foot up, because you had to lift, old tractors then, you had to lift your foot up and push them forward in on the clutch. And of course, he couldn't put his foot, get his foot out in time to push in the clutch. And of course, we went straight through the bloody gate now, smashed the gate, because we're held away. We flied off the tractor, he was gone. The darn that Major never swore, that blemmin' boys, I cut say blemmin' boys, I wring their blemmin' neck for them. They're a cussed nuisance, they are. He was really gone. And he went, oh, smashed the gate, you know. Straight through him, he did, you know. Yeah, straight. Wasn't going fast, but he couldn't stop him. See, he was just going steady, but he couldn't stop him. The gate went pieces like in matchwood, you know.
Yeah,
poor old Major. Cuss me, I've cussed darn blemmin' gate now. There's that blemmin' gate's gone. I ain't take the blemmin' kids no more. Hell up, it used to be. Anyway, there you are. That's not for me.
Well, thank you so much, Terry. That's just absolutely brilliant. And just, as I said, I don't normally sign off these things. I just say goodbye and thank you. However, the Joan Travascas in Marazion Post Office, who was the assistant, was my mum, which is brilliant. All right.
Say that again.
I said Joe Travascas was my mum. So I'm just that was my mum. So I'm just signing that off.
She worked there. She worked there in Craig Shop.
Yeah, that was from her first marriage to Peter Travascas. That's not my dad. My dad's Tony. All right then, my loves. Thank you so much.